SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Jess here, and I'm recording on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, where the rest of this episode has also been recorded. I acknowledge the ongoing effects of colonisation and how it impacts the soil, the production of foods, and in turn, the foods we eat today. I pay my respects to the elders past and present. It always was, and always will be, Aboriginal land. I remember the blue of the tin, the pop of the seal, and the scraping sound of aluminium. He'd turn the can upside down and smack it onto a chopping board. A quick shake and a thunk, and a pink brick would slide out, shiny from jelly. A savouriness would fill the air as the gas stove would hiss and click, followed by the eruption of a blue flame. My dad would take a knife and run it through the block. He'd fry each slice on both sides to crisp the exterior and draw out the sugars. He'd remove each slice with chopsticks, lower the heat, beat a few eggs in a bowl, and scramble them in the fat left in the pan. Once cooked, he'd layer Wonder White, luncheon meat, egg, and Wonder White, cut it horizontally, and wrap it in a flimsy plastic sandwich bag. This was meant to be my lunch, but I'd feel the warmth of the sandwich and smell the salt of the fried meat through my backpack. Before I'd walk through the school gates, my lunch was gone. The perfect recipe: homogenised pork, salt, sugar, potato starch, water, and sodium nitrate. The stuff of gods, the stuff of my childhood. Spam. So, what exactly was an outer suburban Cantonese Australian kid doing eating spam in the early 90s? I thought my dad was making me a white person lunch to help me fit in so other kids wouldn't yuck my yum. He wasn't. As a teenager, when I got a bit of freedom, I'd go to Box Hill with a bunch of mates and eat in Chinese restaurants. It was all we could afford back then. One of these restaurants was New Age Cafe. May she rest in power. It was a Cha Tan Teng, a Cantonese Western cafe in suburban Melbourne where the population was mostly Cantonese. Even though I had never been to a Hong Kong Cha Tan Teng, the cafe felt nostalgic to me. I knew all these not quite white dishes that were also not quite Canto either, because it's what my dad always cooked for me. Pork chops baked on tomato rice, French toast with a slab of butter drowned in condensed milk, and of course, fried spam and egg sandwiches. The dishes were an affordable approximation of Western food by the Hong Kong working class for the Hong Kong working class, a product of colonialism in Hong Kong, which was thought into existence as an aspirational way of eating for the locals. Spam became a staple in these cafes after the post-World War II manufacturing boom. It offered factory workers a cheap and easy source of protein. It was satisfying on a taste level, and it would fill people up. Hong Kong is known for its seafood. Just look at a map. But what it lacks is agricultural land to rear pigs and cattle. Spam was a cheap way to enjoy the taste of pork, in a time where meat was rare and expensive. Spam and instant noodles, spam and macaroni, and of course, spam fried rice. These were the dishes my parents knew from Hong Kong, so that's what they cooked for me. You could say I was built by spam. I'm Jess Ho, and this is Bad Taste, a podcast about who we are through the foods we eat. I'm a food critic with over a decade of experience working in every part of the food and drink industry imaginable. I've seen firsthand how the foods we eat erase cultures, processes, and the people who are behind them. So, who gets to define what good food is? I'm used to working in westernised structures where products, content, and research are made for the white Western consumer. But what if it wasn't? I want to know if food can be a way of getting closer to a freer, equitable, anti-racist world. Especially if we hear from people who are usually left out of the narrative. You'll also hear from me. I'll tell my story as a child of immigrants, trying to find my identity between old-school Cantonese culture in a white Australian backdrop. Investigating the foods I eat has changed my way of thinking and brought me back to my roots. It's allowed me to create my own definition of what it means to be Australian. This is why I'm doing a deep dive into Spam, an ingredient that causes reactions of intense excitement or a strong, visceral disgust, and nothing in between, depending on who you talk to. Right now, we're in the middle of a Spam resurgence. In 2021, Spam sales hit a record high for its seventh year. While some of you are sus on Spam, the reality is Spam is popular. So, why is Spam having a moment? How did it make its way into our pantries in the first place? And how do we eat it? Get ready to be spammed with Spam.
I've got 6 kids. I've got 3 boys and 3 girls. I've got 15, 9, 8, 5, 4, 3.
Out of the 6 kids, they all like different things.
This is Nathan Lyons, a Wiradjuri man with a big family. A big family of picky eaters.
When I do hot dogs, there's 2 of them that doesn't like the red skin on the hot dog, so I've got to sit there and individually peel a couple of hot dogs for them.
I've never peeled a hot dog before, but something tells me that it's harder than a banana.
Sometimes when I'm cooking, I'm doing 3 separate versions of what I'm doing. So yeah, there's a wide range of palates in my house and a lot of fussy eaters.
But do you know what this wide range of picky palates universally enjoys? Spam.
So we do like Spam fried rice, just Spam on its own, just fried up, you know, with a bit of sauce. You know, the kids love it. It's definitely hitting my household.
In addition to being the official cook of the house and a lover of Spam, Nathan is a TikTok influencer.
I'm better known as Cooking with the Corey. I make a lot of stuff at Spam. And yeah, I'm pretty much a bit of a home cook who uploads stuff and people seem to like that.
Nathan's being humble. When he says he uploaded stuff, and some people seem to like that, Cooking with Akuri has amassed over 181,000 followers and almost 2 million likes.
Hey, welcome back to Cooking with Akuri. Today for lunch I've done the age-old classic of Spam and fried egg on fresh white bread.
Oh, he's part of the great Spam revival, and he cooks with Spam a lot.
Hey, welcome back to Cooking with Akuri. This morning for breakfast, I made some Spam delicious eggs, eh?
I've wasted hours of my life watching endless cooking videos on social media, and a lot of them are professionally lit, technique-driven, and filled with bougie ingredients and unprocessed foods. And Nathan's isn't. So, how is it that he's attracted so many followers?
Why do you think people love and respond to your videos so much?
I think one of the reasons they respond to it so much is they can identify with what I cook. The stuff that I do is just homemade, home-cooked. You know, it looks like what they'd make. And some of the stuff I do, they want to do themselves. I'm just not too sure on how to do it. But seeing and hearing just an average Joe doing it, I think that gives them a bit more confidence to get in the kitchen and do it.
The pandemic's been tough on a lot of people. Money's tight. Spam's cheap. It's no wonder that Nathan's TikTok following exploded during 2020.
I'm feeding a family of 8 on a single income, so sometimes I can feed them dinner for $8 or less. I think that's what people love about it. Everyone's struggling both financially and mentally at, you know, all this stuff that's going on. To be able to feed such a large number of people on such a tight budget, I think that's what people like.
And there it is. Spam is a saviour in the pantry. It's practical, easy to cook, and, as Nathan's harshest critic says,
that's really good.
Spam has always been a secret shame ingredient for me. So it's a surprise that it's popular. Like, really popular. But where did it get all its fans? I'm heading to Etta in Brunswick, an intimate restaurant obsessed with seasonality, artisan products, sustainability, and fine wines. Exactly where you'd expect to find spam, right?
Hey.
How's it going?
I'm well, how are you?
I'm so good, nice to see you.
I'm friends with Roisin Kuhl, the head chef at Etta. Roche is also a cookbook author and a food writer. It's her day off and she's dressed down, but still one of the most glamorous looking chefs I know. Gold jewellery, a flowing dress, and auntie slippers.
Good to see you too. Moi, moi, how are the children?
Very well, thank you.
Every time I've been to Etta, it's been full and loud. It's packed with people and warm from the hearth that fuels the kitchen. Today, the restaurant's closed. All I can hear is the hum of the fridges. Roche has a refined palate. She's known for having good taste. That's why she's so well respected in the food industry. And why she's also the most unlikely candidate to be a lover of spam.
It is incredibly delicious. I love spam, deeply.
So how often do you eat spam?
Probably like once or twice a month.
Oh,
yeah. Is that a lot?
Like me, the basis of this deep love is something that's tied to her experience of growing up, and Roche knows her spam.
So it was always a food that I had with my mom. My mom grew up in Singapore, and as did I. And convenience food was definitely a big thing, but also something that's so delicious and so accessible and also very affordable. Mum grew up in council housing in Singapore, so mum still calls it like low-class food, but we eat it all the time because it's quite naughty.
But that love of spam didn't extend to all her family members.
My dad is not really in the spam fan camp because he is from Kashmir and they do not have that there. I would eat when dad wasn't around, because my dad always thought it was a bit naughty because he had to always eat proper meals. He always has to have rice and vegetables and like quite nice, balanced, healthy Asian food, basically.
Even though Roche's dad wouldn't eat it, spam was a staple in her house. And it's something she keeps on hand, always in the cupboard.
It's probably my favourite thing to eat when I come home from work really late. It's just slices of fried spam, instant noodles and an egg. Classic.
That's awesome. That's how I ate it too.
Yep.
Sodium levels, what's that?
And if you're going to compare sodium levels of spam to other meats, look at your beloved prosciutto, salami, pastrami. It's much of a muchness.
Well, it's spam or it's like prosciutto or it's mortadella. Like, it's all the same. It's all just salted pork, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
High fat, salted pork.
That's it.
All of these are very salty meat products of varying degrees of processing. Mortadella, like spam, is a force meat. Basically, a force meat is an animal protein that's been finely minced and emulsified with fat. Think pate, terrine, rillette, salami, all that stuff you like to chew on with a glass of wine. But why does spam get the bad rap?
Basically, the crux of it is that spam was brought all around the world to anywhere that the US had an army base.
Spam was first introduced to the world by the American company Hormel Foods in 1937. But sales didn't really take off until World War II.
In World War II, anywhere that the US troops went, so did spam. You can basically see the trail of where they were by what they left behind. Mainly in the Philippines, in Japan, in Korea, all the major places where spam is now celebrated and has become very much a part of that place.
If you look at the Philippines, Spam Salog was a reminder of the US Army bases stationed there during World War II. Bude Jjigae, or the aptly named Army Stew, was a remnant of the US presence during the Korean War.
The culture and the fabric of that place is a history of where the US has been.
Spam became celebrated across Asia. It was a symbol of American freedom and wealth without actually having to be American or go to America. Kind of like drinking a Coke.
I can only speak, obviously, as an Asian person. For Asians, it's, you know, being, like, American items are, you know, they're glamorous, they're expensive, they're shiny. Having a Western product in your pantry makes you seem affluent.
But somehow, spam is still looked down upon in Australia. Even with the staff at Etta, Roche says there's some hesitance around eating spam.
We have quite a diverse team with a few white Australians, and as you can imagine, there is a bit of discomfort around spam because it seems that the Western world has an enormous amount of disdain for it because it represents poverty, it represents, you know, hardship, represents like basically a time where life was really difficult and they had to eat out of cans.
After World War II, it seemed like spam in the West couldn't break its association with wartime poverty. It symbolised hardship and rations.
So, you know, the tables are turned, whereas, you know, Caucasian people would think that spam is, like, cheap and horrible and disgusting because of what it represented to them.
And it's more complex than just being a bad taste on the white Western tongue. When the American government detained Japanese Americans in internment camps during World War II, they sent them canned meats like spam. For many, it's a painful reminder of that time. On the other hand, in Hawaii, spam was embraced by locals. Japanese Americans and immigrants were considered threats during World War II, and they weren't allowed to fish. So, spam was sent over as a protein-rich substitute. Enter the rice and spam specialty, spam musubi. Today, Roche works with ingredients like fish roe, lobster, and heirloom vegetables. As a chef who joined an already established restaurant, provenance was always at the heart of the kitchen's ethos and is synonymous with good taste. This way of cooking seems to be at conflict with everything spam is and what it represents. How does she have the same appreciation for lobster as she does for spam?
My heritage and my, you know, my family history and what I grew up eating, they inform my cooking. So, you know, abalone still is, to me, a luxury item. So I'm not going to be eating it at home. Because at the end of the day, what we cook for diners and what we eat, you know, at home, is there's still such different things. And I am the same person in the restaurant as I am at home. What really drives my cooking is just honesty. And I am just in the pursuit of what's yum. Mm. So yes, like, you know, Etta is very much based on provenance, but I'm still going to put soy sauce on it. You know, so I cook what I know with the ingredients that I understand.
Oh, I love that. So how do you think growing up in Singapore impacted what you ate?
I would say that because of my formative years in Singapore and the food that I was exposed to, I guess I didn't realise how much of an effect it would have on me until I moved to Australia. When I saw how much my palate had been influenced by those early years and the food that I was eating.
I envy her childhood. Singapore is known for its delicious and accessible food like chicken rice, chili crab, fish head curry, sambal stingray. But then she moved to Australia.
It was almost like somebody just sort of turned the light off in flavour when I moved to Australia. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. It was just that, you know, I would eat like fried anchovies with curry sauce in a little plastic bag for breakfast. Whereas here they were like, please eat this toast.
There better be some kaya on that toast.
And I was like, I don't want that. It's got no flavour. But, you know, slowly I began to appreciate, you know, pretty white Australian cuisine as I got a bit older. But initially it was shocking, truly shocking.
Even though I grew up in Australia, I didn't encounter Aussie food until I went to school. What I was fed was what my parents were eating, and that was my normal. I was shocked when I saw plastic cheese, pre-packaged muesli bars, and dry biscuits as a lunchbox staple. Everything seemed so one-dimensional. Everything was one texture. Only salty or only sweet. But in the dishes I was eating, it was salty, smoky, sweet, crunchy, snappy and gelatinous, all at the same time. and that was before you even introduced it to a mound of fluffy white rice. I wondered how Roach dealt with the culture shock.
I was quite lucky because my sister and I, we were already fluent in English, so I was a bit of a little, you know, snob. So it was never a case where I was ashamed of my food or being Asian. I was just like, what are you guys eating? That's gross. It was actually a bit of a turn the tables kind of. However, I think I know a lot of young BIPOC kids would have been bullied quite a lot probably for the food they used to bring to school. Whereas I used to have like thermoses of delicious food my mum would cook. And I'd go hang out with little Thai girls and be like, what are we eating today?
This is not a normal dynamic in an Aussie primary school. It certainly wasn't mine. What a power move. I've asked a lot of questions so far, but this is a very important one that will determine the future of our friendship. How do you like your spam?
Truly sliced and pan-fried in its pure form, you know, so it's crispy on the outside but not getting dry either.
See, that's my favourite way to eat it. So that's what we're going to do.
There's 6 types of spam in Australia. And I've brought the OG, hot and spicy, and bacon. The others are less sodium, light, and oven-roasted turkey. There's a reason why I didn't buy those. We're not doing anything fancy, just a classic taste-off. It delights me to no end that we are introducing spam to Etta's prestigious kitchen.
So I've got the regular spam as a control.
Delicious. Perfection.
Spam with bacon.
I don't really rate it.
And hot and spicy spam.
Delicious.
We open the cans and the sound immediately initiates a Pavlovian response.
Oh, I love that sound.
The sound of the vacuum release when you tip out the meat, not so much.
Just slice it up into 3 little slices so we can fry them up and test them.
We, of course, cook spam the way that God intended. Fried.
As you can see, the bacon one has so much less fat in it. So I don't think it's going to be... You see the hot and spicy one that we're frying? You can see this like amazing fat starting to render out of it. So it's going to be really crispy. Sound is telling you quite a lot. You know, it's the fat content, which leads directly to crispness.
The original and hot and spicy are cooking evenly. That's because of the fat content. This means crisp slices. But the bacon is sticking to the pan.
There you go. Who knew? Who thought bacon would have less fat in it? I know. That's quite interesting. My theory is that the more scrutiny a product or a business is under, the better they have to be in their practices.
Yeah.
They're like this. How many secret cameras do you reckon have been in the spam factory? Mm. You never know.
After all this faffing about, we finally get to eat some spam. We start with the bacon.
It doesn't taste like bacon at all.
No.
It's just firmer. Al dente.
Spam.
Yeah.
We are not really fans of the bacon, not in appearance or performance. Then the hot and spicy.
Oh. Tastes like a chorizo.
Mm.
That's amazing. It's actually spicy.
Yum. Yeah, and you actually get the bit of heat under your nose.
Mmm. And you know when cans say spicy but they're lying to you?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually spicy. I wouldn't eat a whole can of that in a good way.
Mmm.
Yum. Oh, back to the OG then.
Yeah.
And finally, the original spam.
Oh, how good spam. Still good. Mmm. No words.
We have some shocking results with a winner we did not see coming.
You know what? I think I would actually say the hot and spicy. I think I like it more than the original. Is that... Oh. Is that naughty? Is that controversial?
Potentially. I feel that the OG is probably more versatile, but...
True.
Like,
true, true.
Very fun times I want to eat when I'm drunk or post-service. Oh, yeah. Definitely the hot and spicy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's yum. Mm. I'm going to say it's a solid 9.95 out of 10.
Yeah. It's good.
Who knew you could improve on perfection?
Eating spam definitely tastes like home to me. It just reminds me a lot of my mom and just eating lunch with her when my dad's not at home. My dad's not at home to judge us.
It's gone wild.
It's fair. Literally. Yum.
History and nostalgia aside, Spam is definitely not healthy. No force meat is. No cured meat is. It's processed meat out of a can. What did you expect? But it is undeniably delicious, and that deliciousness has a place. Because even Roche's dad, who was adamant on eating balanced meals, sounds like he might finally be enjoying Spam too.
Now that my dad's retired and my mum and dad are at home together, Mum's just like, Raj, making Spam, and then he'll just, you know, begrudgingly eat a bit. But I think he actually likes it, but he's just pretending that he doesn't, just out of principle.
The truth is, my relationship with Spam has changed over the years. I'm no longer built by Spam. It may be in my foundations, but the bricks are now consciously made up of less processed, less shelf-stable foods. My health has become a focus. When I was first given Spam, I assumed it was to help me assimilate. Truthfully, I don't know if it was meant for me to feel like I had a foothold in white culture despite my Cantonese exterior, or if it was meant for the kids at school to see that I could fit in. Now, on the rare occasion that I eat Spam, I still think about my dad frying it up and shoving it in my school bag. The thing is, he offered it up to me because he thought it was tasty. There was never an explanation about where this dish came from. He didn't sit me on the counter and tell me about the history of Hong Kong or about social or class structures. He didn't inject the dish with intention. He was just making me lunch. Quick, easy, satisfying. As an adult, I've been going out of my way to investigate the food I grew up with. I want to find meaning, understand my roots, and the conditions my parents grew up in. I found out for myself that fried Spam sandwiches were part of a desire to eat like rich British colonisers. My dad didn't think that way. He was time poor. We were poor poor. And sometimes a sandwich is just a sandwich. So I can analyse Spam, trace back its history through a world war and American exceptionalism, fry up hot and spicy Spam, which was a real breakthrough. And I can talk to Spam aficionados, but all this information keeps leading me to the same conclusion. Spam was, and always will be, delicious. And I'll keep eating it as long as I can, even if I have hereditary high blood pressure. Want to raise your blood pressure? Stick around after the credits for a recipe on how to enjoy Spam with minimal guilt and maximum satisfaction.
Bad Taste is an SBS podcast. It's hosted and produced by Jess Ho. Michelle Macklem is our executive producer. Our sound designer is Nicole Pingon. Our producer is Bez Zoder. Our editor is Zoe Tennant. And I'm Beth Atkinson-Quinton, the series producer. Big thanks to our Spamily, the SBS team, Rachel Sibley, Caroline Gates, Joel Supple, and mix engineer Max Gosford. Our theme music is Lang Lang by Rainbow Chan. Our stunning podcast art is by Joanna Hu. Thanks to Nathan Lyons, Rasheen Kuhl, Shopfront Arts Co-op, Helen Zaltzman, and our Masubi master, Shirley Wang. We're back next week with more delicious and disgusting flavours, so make sure you follow Bad Taste in your favourite podcast app so you can get every episode delivered straight to your device. If you enjoyed the show and you want to support us, hit the share button, reply all to your emails, retweet our tweets so you can spam every person you know.
And the recipe is fried Spam and eggs on rice. If you're looking for a vegan alternative to Spam, Omnipork are manufacturing a plant-based luncheon meat.
Ooh.
Keep an eye out in your local grocer. For this recipe, you'll need rice. White, brown, sushi, multigrain, your preference, cooked any way you like. An egg and, duh, Spam. Slice your spam into 1 centimetre thick slices and set aside. Cook your rice, and when it's done and you've fluffed the rice, heat a pan and add your spam to it when the pan is cold. As it heats up, it will fry in its own fat. Flip the slices to crisp the other side and fry the egg sunny side up in the same pan. Add the cooked rice to a bowl and top with the fried slices of spam, egg, and enjoy. For the full recipe and instructions, head to our website on SBS, sbs.com.au/badtaste.
At Arizona State University, we offer a wide variety of degree programs online to match all kinds of interests and career aspirations. Programs that are taught by the same notable faculty who teach on campus and designed using innovative technology to improve learning outcomes and equip you for post-graduation success. That's why 87% of ASU online graduates indicated they were promoted at work or received an increase in salary after earning their degree. Find your program at asuonline.asu.edu.